Twin Cities News Talk, AM 1130 and 103.5 FM. Your third hour of your Wednesday edition of Justice and Drew is underway. We will be joined by a friend of the show, James T. Harris, in about just over 30 minutes, the last segment of the show today.
Yeah, looking forward to talking with James. Do want to get his thoughts on all the recent Mueller nonsense, but also we want to talk to him about a little Conway, or Kanye. Not Kellyanne.
Or Conway.
Or Connor, or Burr Conway, or that. Yeah, we can talk about Kellyanne Conway, too. We really want to talk about Kanye.
Kanye, he's stirring all sorts of nonsense up.
Yeah, he absolutely is.
I don't know if there's anyone, you know, he does have a new album coming out. I don't know if there's anyone better at self-promotion than Kanye. I mean, he found the perfect angle to, I mean, assuming that there's, that there's some self-promotion motivation here, which I think is a pretty safe assumption, boy, did he find the perfect angle to take.
Yeah, and that's what we'll be discussing with James when he joins us just after the bottom of the hour. Also, we'll get into the 18-year-old Kazia Dom, who's been accused of cultural appropriation for wearing a traditional Chinese dress at her high school prom. This has sparked outrage. We'll talk about how stupid that whole controversy
is. Really dumb.
But speaking of dumb, right now we're in the middle of a gangrene update. Star Tribune. Twin Cities zero wasters go to extremes to keep trash from local landfills to cut down on garbage. They're changing everything from how they shop to what they eat. Takes an interesting turn, though, Drew. Hansen and other Twin City individuals have learned that being a parent and working to live a zero waste lifestyle presents unique challenges.
Yeah, you got to figure out how to stop pooping.
There's that.
That's a challenge.
Yeah. You know what? I take issue with B. Johnson, and this was the French-born author of the Zero Waste Home, self-described zero waste lifestyle guru, says they can fit a year's worth of her California family's trash in a single quart mason jar. Are they the thinnest people on the face of the planet?
Probably unhealthily so.
Yeah, we're obviously not.
No, they're living off wheat crackers.
That's true.
I'm sorry, that's the other family.
I'm sure they are too. Kids make a lot of garbage, said Jenna Bergendahl, a stay-at-home mom who lives in Minneapolis. The diapers and the messes and ruined clothing, food they're not eating. Now, Bergdahl, who blogs about her efforts, oh joy, with Hansen and another local.
What a fascinating blog.
Their blog, by the way, Sam, zeroish.org. Now I'm on board. That I can get behind.
Zero-ish.
Okay.
All right.
You know, right. Zero-esque. We live a zero-waste mentality. That I can hop on board with. Right? Look, geez, their own. Everybody, you can do whatever you want.
Sure.
Right? Whatever floats your boat, whatever makes you happy. But don't lie, because you're lying, because you're not zero-wasters. So far, she's on track, right? She said she made a New Year's resolution to limit her family of five's trash to one kitchen bag each season. You know, goals. One kitchen bag each season. So far, she's on track, despite having to turn to disposable diapers instead of cloth when her washing machine broke.
Yeah, the most recent post on zeroish.org is why traveling with cloth diapers is not as scary as it sounds.
It sounds pretty scary.
Yeah, that sounds terrifying.
It sounds terrifying. It
sounds gross.
It sounds nasty. It sounds stinky.
By the way, what's the... Is the wash...
On a plane? like a 7-hour flight?
I assume / hope that if you're going to commit yourself to traveling with cloth diapers, that you have some kind of like scent protective bag you can put them in so that you don't have to punish other people around you that you can put your dirty diapers into.
The washing machine in their house, is it like a big hollowed out tree trunk with a hole in the roof? Just wait for it to rain. I mean, that's... You need to waste things to make the washing machine. Bergendahl also joined the Minneapolis Toy Library, which allows her family to check out different toys every few weeks rather than buying new ones. Oh, good.
That's actually kind of a clever idea.
The kids never have any ownership of anything. That's fantastic.
that's not a bad idea. I'm gonna, because kids get bored with toys so quick. You know, they play with a toy for a few weeks, and then all of a sudden, they never want to. It just sits in their closet for the rest of eternity.
I will I'm gonna step back from this for fear that we might lose the show if we get into this particular debate. I disagree. I think it's important for kids when they have ownerships of things, and it's important for kids to have something of their own. And even if they don't end up using it later on, that's a very important thing for a child to have some ownership of something.
At a certain age, yeah. But there are, you know, toddlers don't comprehend that sort of thing, and toddlers are the ones that, you know, we'll play with a toy for a little while and then be done with it, yeah, and not care about it anymore.
Yeah, that's totally what every single mom or dad wants, a bunch of toddlers shoving other toddler toys into their mouths.
They can be clean. They can be sanitized.
Just saying. Let's talk about the ice cream that they have to go and eat. Let's do that instead. Instead of getting ice cream in a standard plastic lined paper tub, the zero wasters say can't be recycled or composted, her family only has this treat at an ice cream shop, and everyone there orders an edible one. But again, it takes a lot of stuff to actually go and make that ice cream. I just want to, you know, that's the concept of zero waste. That's great for you personally, but don't, I hope that they realize when they go and they consume things like ice cream, which is not a necessity, there is a level of waste that they are contributing to society in consuming that ice cream from the number of products that end up getting wasted to make the ice cream. You know, I mean,
yeah, everything they buy and consume has produced waste.
Amber Hockendahl, a Minneapolis biologist, decided to go zero waste. She started with a trash audit. I went through my trash.
That is according to zeroish.org. That is the first thing you need to do before embarking upon a zero waste lifestyle is conducting a trash audit.
Is that like step one of the 12 steps to become a zero waster? And to feel much, yep, you know, exponentially better about yourself.
Since everyone generates different types of trash and lives in different circumstances, there is no single magical zero waste swap that is the best. By auditing your trash, and boy, that sounds like a fun process.
That sounds horrible.
What are we doing today, Mom? Well, we're auditing our trash. Everybody, put on some gloves. We're going to audit our trash.
Went through room by room. Then she did Google searches for sustainable replacements for dental floss, toothbrushes, and plastic cling wrap she'd found. To her surprise, it was fairly easy to swap out many things that she had been tossing out. Biodegradable silk floss. Oh, sounds lovely. So with the biodegradable silk floss, would you go and use the floss on your teeth, and then would you just eat the floss?
No. I don't know.
It's like an added bonus because you got all the extra food you pulled out from between your teeth.
You go and you set your floss down in the yard.
Let
it biodegrade.
Oh, okay.
You take your floss.
And you pick a spot.
Yeah. You get your floss compost pile.
What a beautiful garden you have. How do you tend to it? Floss?
I just throw my floss into it. Floss and pieces of pork.
Even though sustainable products are more expensive, many zero wasters say they end up saving money, largely because they buy less and cook from scratch. Are they doing an audit of that? Are they doing an audit of the amount of money that they've ended up having to spend on all the zero waste stuff to see if they're actually releasing? I'm just curious if they're doing trash audits. But Hockendahl's husband was not on board with the homemade toothpaste that his wife concocted. And despite her efforts, her dog would only eat food that's sold in non-recyclable packaging. Well, I think the answer is clear. You got to get rid of your dog.
Yeah, but the dog was, what, consciously on board with this? Like, no, I'm sorry. I'm not going to eat that food.
No, not gonna happen. I want to know what the homemade toothpaste was. What was that concocted out of?
Crackers. Leftover crackers.
Leftover crackers.
Yeah, with some mint thrown in. Crackers and mint leaves. Just scraping them on your teeth.
I hate to sound like an elitist snob, but I never want to meet any of these people.
I'm sure they're insufferable.
Just the worst.
You know, there are certain people who engage in certain activities that has an air of insufferability about them. They're vegans, CrossFitters, and zero wasters. They never miss an opportunity to tell you all about their veganism. They're cross-fitting, and they're zero-wasting.
Mm-hmm. Look, again, to each their own. If it makes you happy, that's fine and dandy.
Yeah, man.
Goodness gracious.
I know. It's silly. And for the Star Tribune to, you know, do this piece of hailing them like these modern-day pioneer heroes.
Well, you know, and look, the real... And this is, I'm being serious. The real problem in it here with this is that it really is simply, it's a personal choice to be style over substance. I know that these individuals feel like that they are doing something of quality for the environment, but they're really not. I mean, when you look at the big picture of the impact that a single individual is going to have like this on society when it comes to things that are being wasted, it's not going to make a dent at all.
No.
And I
would imagine that most of them would acknowledge that.
I hope so.
This is just about them doing what they can, you know, taking control over the aspects of their life that they have control over to make them feel better. You know, because I get it. I understand. I've seen instances in my life where you bought something. I'm a part of one of those shave clubs, right? Where you get the razor shipped to you every single month.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. It drives me nuts because I get this manila size envelope package, right? For four little razor blades. There's so much ridiculous, unnecessary packaging that comes in shipping me these four little razor blades. So these can be in a tiny little envelope. You don't need all this. And it bothers me. And
Yeah. So
I understand why, you know, certain types of activities, you can look at it and go, this is a lot of unnecessary waste, and that bothers me. And if you want to make choices in your life and change your lifestyle to try to minimize that as much as possible, more power to you. But don't do it under the guise of that you're having any real tangible impact on the environment, because you're not. There was some volcano that's been spewing out emissions now for the past week, and like one little puff out of that volcano negates every global warming effort that's been made by every government in the world over the last decade.
Yeah, also gives me the ability to laugh at people when I see them driving Priuses.
Right.
Well, and look, the thing of it is, too, the amount of effort that the individuals, like we were mocking, so appropriately so, the amount of effort that they put into this, I can't help but feel that if you were to calculate all of the lengths you're going to achieve this zero waste lifestyle, that if you were able to quantify that in some way, shape, or form, you could actually go with that and apply that energy and effort to something that actually could do something positive for the community. To each their own, but there are other ways where you can go and you can help the environment where you don't have to make these ridiculous self-serving sacrifices. You know, we talk about this with conservationism all the time. We don't have a really good outlook on it. And unfortunately, there's so many agenda-driven ideas out there and corporations and movements that the real good tangible stuff when it comes to sustainability in the environment just gets lost. Doesn't get talked about.
The weirdest tweet. So you want your kid to go to a trade school so you don't have to pay for college, and now you're going to make him rent his own toys. Come on now, who are you, Nancy Pelosi?
Yeah, what? Drew. Jeez.
What?
Yeah, toys.
What?
I totally got all of that. Yeah,
I think I thought it was more of like a toy swap.
Yeah,
not a toy rental program.
That totally wasn't from my ghosting card. All right, this fits.
I'm very confused.
This comes out of tcbmag.com. Minneapolis officials announced new targets late last week for moving the city to 100% renewable electricity. I was going to with the story, Drew, but I can't because
you're done.
I spent all this time doing notes on the story, and that's just 100% renewable electricity plan. Good luck with that. Get all the zero wasters on board as well.
Yeah.
You want to go 100%-ish? You can go that route.
Yeah.
100%-ish renewable energy plan.
If they would be honest and just say, we're going to do as much as we can.
Sure.
As much as feasibly possible without, you know, sacrificing the integrity of our electrical grid. without sacrificing, you know, the ability to provide enough electricity that, that people need. We're going to try to do as much as we can. But to come out with this 100% renewable electricity plan, it's foolish.
The effort will be reflected by a shift to electricity sources such as wind and solar instead of fossil fuels. But again, you can't, if you go the route you went, you don't get all the money that they're trying to get.
Yeah.
You go the 100% route and then you have to do everything, you know, humanly possible to achieve that particular goal. This new goal, the latest move by the city to achieve a vision of a more environmentally friendly culture for Minneapolis. Councilmember Cam Gordon said this, climate change is one of the gravest challenges we face, and renewable energy is one of the solutions. Obviously didn't read any of the local news stories from what happened during on the streets of Minneapolis from over the weekend, right? This resolution builds on the work of our adopted climate action plan and will help us reach our aggressive goal of reducing carbon emissions by 80% by 2050. He's still going to be in office by then? I'm just saying. Manchild Mayor Jacob Fry said this, an effective way to make sure that energy remains affordable and that our transition to clean energy meets the needs of those most marginalized and historically impacted by pollution is persistent, intentionally community engagement of a wide range of people. What? Man, he is so good at saying a bunch of words.
Yeah, he's really good at putting a bunch of words together that say nothing.
This is just...
an effective way to make sure that energy remains affordable and that our transition to clean energy meets the needs of those most marginalized and historically impacted by pollution is persistent, intentional, and community engagement from a wide range of people. So,
do stuff.
People should try hard. That's all I got out of that. And he made sure to get the marginalized, you know, historically impacted community in there. So he got that cred. You know, he checked that box in the statement, even though it has nothing to do with anything else that he said.
Is there a 504 C3 like organization just called, you know, like the People Try Hard?
Yeah, Jacob Fry's a walking word cloud.
Can I donate?
That's all he is.
To the People Try Hard?
Resolutions like the one passed today are more than just a statement of values. They're a roadmap for shifting our systems better serve all of our neighborhoods.
He's Michael Scott from The Office. You're right. He's a walking word cloud.
That's it.
It's all that it is.
Yeah, there's all these words, these buzzwords floating around his head at all times. And at any given time, he just goes and grabs a few, throws them together, and it's like, boom, that sounded like a statement.
Sustainability is really the best and most viable thing for the future of our community. And we can achieve that goal by reaching out to the people who are most affected by the negative impacts of pollution within our society. And we'll do that by everybody working together really hard.
We're going to get our stakeholders involved to impact the ones that are most marginalized. That sounded like I just said something, didn't it? I didn't. I totally said nothing there, but it sounded like I said something.
Mayor, Manchild Mayor Jacob Fry does not adhere to the zero waste because he wastes a lot of the English language.
He wastes a lot of words.
All the words wasted.
Congressman Jason Lewis is going to join state legislators Eric Pratt, Senator Eric Pratt, Representative Tony Albright, hosting a press conference today at the state capitol about their efforts to bring increased accountability and transparency to the Met Council board. This is happening at 2 o'clock today, Capitol Press Conference Room. Again, it's Jason Lewis, Senator Pratt, Representative Albright, press conference on Met Council compliance. We will cover this on the show tomorrow. We will talk about this. This is all swirling around Jason Lewis's amendment to the FAA reauthorization bill that would require Met Council to have elected representation rather than simply appointed by the whims of the governor. You've got so much unhinged pushback from this, from the mayor, from Governor Dayton, from the Star Tribune editorial board. Everybody's freaking out because they don't want accountability on the Met Council. They don't want the voice of the electorate to have a say in what the Met Council does. It is very beneficial and very convenient to them to have an unaccountable shadow government, you know, that is subject only to the whims of the agenda of the governor. that's going out and has taxing authority and has a massive budget that they can do whatever they want with. The fact that it's so important to them to retain this level of unaccountability and lack of transparency with this much money tells you that they don't believe that their ideas would withstand the wills of the electorate.
Well, and they're so disingenuous with their arguments. Governor Mark Dayton issued a letter to Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell yesterday. A couple of items from this. The first paragraph into the second. As the Senate prepares to take up the FAA reauthorization legislation, I urge you, this is Governor Mark Dayton's letter. I don't know if he wrote it or not, but anyways, this came from his office and he signed it. I urge you not to include language from the House bill that would effectively end the Metropolitan Council's designation as the Metropolitan Planning Organization for the Twin Cities region of Minnesota. Like, they're taking this bizarro sort of tact of saying that it's going to end its designation. But the next line says this: H.R. 4 will modify a statute relating MPOs established prior to December 18th, 1991, by now requiring local elected officials to serve on their governing boards. Well, that kind of flies in the face of you saying that this would effectively end the Met Council's designation as an MPO. You get further on in his letter, and basically his argument is, it's been here for a long time, so don't change it.
Right.
It's allowed under current law for over 25 years. The FTA, the Federal Highway Administration, also recently reaffirmed the Met Council status. Yeah. So, you know, it's been here. We've done it for a long time. So yeah, don't change
it. Alone.
Just leave us.
We like it the way it is.
Oh, my gosh. Eliminating the Met Council's MPO status. It doesn't do that. Would trigger a lengthy redesignation process that would bring uncertainty about federally funded transportation projects in the Twin Cities and circumvent a longstanding productive process at a time when transportation investment is critical to our region. Sadly, that just confirms that Governor Mark Dayton is indeed suffering from the same word cloud disease that Minneapolis man-child Mayor Jacob Fry is. Because that was just a whole bunch of words that meant a bunch of baloney. A lot of tearing up of articles. I'm saying, save.
We're going to talk about this a little bit more tomorrow because we will have a press conference that's happening today, again, at 2 o'clock with Jason Lewis, Senator Pratt, Representative Albright. And we will also be joined by Kim Crockett from the Center of the American Experiment. We're going to talk a little education funding, pre-K funding with her, but also looking forward to getting her thoughts on this effort from Jason Lewis.
Comes out of Fox News. 18-year-old Kazia Dom was accused of cultural appropriation for wearing a traditional Chinese dress at her high school prom. Kazia Dom is not apologizing for wearing what she calls a beautiful Chinese dress to her high school prom, despite receiving backlash from thousands of people online, some of whom called her a closet racist and accused her of cultural appropriation.
And I want to thank Twitter real quick for highlighting this. You know, they've got those Twitter moments now. You know, Twitter pushed this out themselves. And this was, I mean, it almost amounted to targeted harassment of a teenager.
Right.
As much as this was promoted and showing up on my timeline because of their Twitter little moments thing, and that this got trending and they started pushing it because it got trending. This is a teenager. Keep that in mind.
Yeah, some of the comments attached to this go like this. This isn't okay. I wouldn't wear a traditional Korean, Japanese, or any other traditional dress, and I'm Asian. I wouldn't wear traditional Irish, Swedish, or Greek dress either. There's a lot of history behind these clothes. Sad. Oh, God. The pose is just the cherry on top of this casually racist post. It's not just a dress. It's something that means something historically and traditionally to the Chinese. This is insanity.
Yeah.
You get to it. There's an article out of the National Review that really lays it out squarely, right? If you're a normal human being, right? Like the majority of Americans who saw the Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter feeds fill up with prom pictures last weekend, you thought it was a pretty girl and a pretty dress and nothing more. Mm-hmm. But if you're a toxic social justice warrior, you saw something else. You saw oppression. You saw exploitation. You saw bigotry. And yes, gasp, you saw cultural appropriation. The dress you see had obvious Asian influences, but Dom isn't Asian. So what?
So what? She found a style. She found a fashion that she liked, that she wanted to wear. She thought it looked good. You know, there's another way to look at this. When you see something that you think might be cultural appropriation, you could also choose to look at it as paying homage or showing some respect,
right,
and an appreciation for the styles of that culture, or for the food of that culture, or for the music of that culture, of seeing somebody seeing something and going, that's great, that's amazing, I would like to be a part of that, and I would like to participate in that.
The National Review article says, here's why it matters. It's indicative of how people who care the most about identity and oppression are seized by rage and unreason. And because cultures are shaped and defined by those who care the most, Dom's story is not just a Twitter story. It's increasingly the American story. Take the concept of cultural appropriation. It's absurd down to its very definition. One author who wrote Who Owns Culture, Appropriation and Authenticity in American Law defines it like this. Taking intellectual property, traditional knowledge, cultural expressions, or artifacts from someone else's culture without permission. This can include unauthorized use of another culture's dance, dress, music, language, folklore, cuisine, traditional medicine, religious symbols, etc. It's most likely to be harmful when the source community is a minority group that has been oppressed or exploited in other ways, or when the object of appropriation is particularly sensitive, e.g. sacred objects. In a multi-ethnic, multi-racial culture like America's, the potential for offense is thus unlimited. Unlimited.
They don't... That is the beauty of having a multi-racial culture like we have.
Yeah.
Whatever happened to the idea of a melting pot? Whatever happened to the idea of everybody coming together and borrowing and learning from each other's cultures and improving everybody's lives because you had all the best parts of all these different cultures coming together and melding? Nobody gets mad about cultural appropriation when it comes to food. That makes me laugh.
Right.
You know, it's like, a fusion cuisine. You can't do that. That food is important to that culture.
Unless it's a college campus. Unless it's a university and you decide to, say, host a Cinco de Mayo party with traditional Mexican food.
Oh, that's
right. Yeah, see, you just, yeah, I know. I know.
That is the granddaddy of all cultural appropriating holidays.
Yeah.
I've already seen warnings from people on social media like, hey, guys, Cinco de Mayo is coming up. And I just want to remind everybody, it's not okay to wear a sombrero for Cinco de Mayo. It's, you know, it's a very American holiday.
I'll tell you what. I'll take all this seriously when we ban Halloween. That's the deal. I'll take all this cultural. If we go the route, if we just own it, and then we got to ban. You got to ban. No more Halloween. Halloween's done.
But John, Halloween. Halloween is fun, and it's accepted cultural appropriation.
That's right, because there's a lot of money in Halloween.
Culturally, are we appropriating witch culture?
Well, you know, look, any costume, you're dressing of somebody else. You're just appropriating whatever that person or thing is.
It's true.
651-989-5855. It's very feisty this morning. All right. We'll keep it up. James T. Harris, fellow talk show host, iHeartRadio, Facebook, viral Facebook superstar, and public speaker. He's going to join us next. We're going to get into a little bit more of this. Also talk about all this uproar when it comes to Kanye and President Donald Trump. He has some very interesting words to say on that particular issue.
Justice in...
Drew, we haven't had the opportunity here on Twin Cities News Talk to get into the lack of female ponytails in Avengers Infinity War and how that's apparently sexist.
I really wanted to... Might have to save that for Friday. That's good Friday fodder.
Superheroes don't wear ponytails, and yes, it's sexist. Female superheroes' hair is basically the patriarchy. I hate people. I'm sorry, did I say that out loud?
Did you just assume that, like, no females had any input into this movie whatsoever?
Can we stop already? Can we just enjoy stuff?
Yeah. There's no fat guy superheroes. There's no fat, bald guy superheroes.
Yeah. Where are the dad bod superheroes?
Right.
Darn it.
Yeah. How come no superheroes look like me?
Yeah.
I can't relate to any of this. It affects my self-esteem when I don't see Iron Man in like a 4X suit. I can't fit in the Iron Man suit.
You know, I'm fine with there being no ponytails because that's a lazy hairstyle. When I have a ponytail, I'm being lazy. I don't want my superhero women to be lazy.
True story, right? Yeah.
Like, I don't consider this a hairstyle. I consider this a lazy style. I don't want superheroes being lazy.
Fred,
they gotta look like Chris Evans. Oh, they gotta look like Thor. They gotta be, you know, the Hemsworths and the Chris Evans and the Robert Downey. Would superheroes just have to be good looking too? There's no such thing as an ugly superhero.
Friend of the show, fellow iHeart Media talk show host, viral Facebook superstar, motivational speaker, James T. Harris. What have you walked into, sir?
Good morning, Drew. There's always that fat guy from the Incredibles, you know, the father from the Incredibles. He's kind of fat. It's a superhero.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. But then he started working out, though, remember? And he trimmed up.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. He was fake
back
fat.
To square one. Back to square one. Man, how you doing, guys?
It's a cartoon. Fantastic, man. It's great to hear from you. How are things in your world? We do want to get back to a bit of this cultural appropriation, and certainly want to get your thoughts on Conway. I know that I keep saying Conway.
You do.
Kanye West. I know you had some posts on your Facebook page. Real quick, though, let's go here because I know you've been embroiled in the middle of this, and we haven't talked about it on the show. And I'm kind of surprised this hasn't made national news. But we're going through our own legislative session here in Minnesota. The governor just requested $136 million in emergency funding for the school districts that are facing budget shortfalls as sort of a short term fix to keep teachers from being fired or potentially schools from closing. This happens often when it comes to the legislative session. You in Arizona have been going through something really incredible right now when it comes to school funding. Can you give us the short version of what you're currently dealing with in your state?
So the Red for Ed movement, the whole socialist strike, teachers walking out, swept through Arizona. And the teachers here demanded a 20% pay increase. Which everybody was surprised and balked at. But to our shock, the governor said, okay, and he gave it to him. He said, we will give you a 20% increase and we also will fund the other people who work in the schools. And guess what, John Justice? The teachers walked out anyway.
What?
They've been out of school for, I think this is the sixth day of the strike. And they started out with the parents behind them. But now, quickly, it has turned into a backlash. They started a movement, Purple for Parents. And these people are dead serious. We have the Goldwater Institute down here that's talking about lawsuits against school districts that close because at the end of the day, it is the students and the parents that are getting hurt as we are only 1 month away from school ending. The legislature and the governor here are about to sign a budget into action today, and now the union is starting to kind of break down. They are embarrassed beyond belief because the big question here in Arizona is why are you striking when the governor and the legislature are actually meeting your demands? They met their demands day one.
Wow!
And yet the union still went out on strike, and all of these teachers, you go down and you ask them, why are you here? Why are you striking? And they can't tell you. This is just how embarrassing it was. The leadership was straight, hardcore socialist. They had the AFL-CIO. They had people coming in nationally doing speeches. They had like 50 to 60,000 people at the Capitol marching. And then it turned into a festival with food trucks, tent cities, the Red for Ed band. It became just a charade, and they ended up, declowning themselves. And we think now that teachers are going back to school starting tomorrow with their tail between their legs.
Well, you want to talk about, just on a personal note, it was funny because Logan, my 15-year-old, has got a buddy of his who lives back in Arizona. And the past couple of days, he's been playing with him this game World of Tanks on the Xbox. And he never does during the week because the time doesn't match up. I go, why are you playing with Alex? He goes, oh, he's been out of school since Friday. I'm like, what?
Yeah.
I'm like, what?
It was It's an amazing spectacle. The kids out of school, it's to the point now, this really screws with, like, seniors who want to graduate. Some of them are going off to the military. Some of them are going off on missions and stuff like that. This all gets screwed up because of why? I mean, again, why? The governor and the legislature are trying to give you exactly what you demanded. They give it to you, and you still are marching. What it was, at the end of the day, they were trying to put in a Democrat government, a Democrat public instruction, Secretary of Public Instruction. It's a microcosm of the resistance movement.
Yeah.
You had a bunch of butt-hurt liberals trying to overthrow our government here, and they used the teachers, and ultimately they used the kids, and it backfired.
You're telling me that the left took a very populist and popular issue, which is, you know, teachers and teacher pay, and co-opted it in order to get more Democrats in elected office?
What?
That never happens.
That's so strange. But what's so sad is you had so many teachers who you know, believed it. It was a social media phenomenon. And get this, the leader of the movement, his name is Noah Carvelis, is 23 years old and hasn't been a teacher for a year. And is on a provisional license because, number one, he did not pass the Arizona Constitution test for teacher's license or the U.S. Constitution test for teacher's license, and yet they have this asshat leading the union. It was a joke, and you have to know that I had a field day with it.
You're talking about a political operative, not a teacher. That's a political operative who decided that, you know, I need to get the minimal requirements to call myself a teacher so that I'll be more effective as a political operative.
This is the kid who's a music teacher who, instead of teaching students how to play, you know, instruments or read music, teaches them hardcore rap. Teaches little black kids to hate the police, and teaches little white boys to hate themselves. It is a spectacle.
Well, it was really you know, now I seem to have a better idea of why it didn't make national news. That makes sense now. I was very curious because obviously I still got a lot of connections down there. I see a lot of the posts on Facebook. I was shocked at the number of people whose opinions I respected who were suddenly out there pushing and championing parents and teachers going out and doing these strikes, and I couldn't make any sense of it. I go, wow, how is this swept into conservative circles as well? But now it makes a little bit more sense of why it didn't go national, because it sounds like the legislature, like you said, on day one gave them what they wanted, and they went ahead and protested anyways, in which case
day
it didn't.
Day one. If it would have gone national, it would have been detrimental to the left, to the cause. It was such an embarrassment that even the national media wouldn't touch it because they realized that these people are looking like fools down here. The governor outmaneuvered the unions. I mean, outmaneuvered them just brilliantly. Said, okay, 20%, that sounds outrageous. You got it. Our teachers deserve it. And they still walk out on strike. The whole state.
Wow. Wow.
So, you know, I think that charter schools and private schools are about to see a real boom in 2019.
Well, you know, we spent a big chunk of time on the show this morning, again, talking with James T. Harris, about the abundance of jobs, the millions upon millions of jobs in these different trade fields that are going unfilled because so many college students so many high school students still go and decide to pursue college and universities after they get out of high school instead of going in and trying to get some of these trade skills. And we were discussing sort of this idea of, you know, what makes people happy and what it means to be happy and fulfilled in a job. And we're seeing this, you see a pushback, obviously, what you're dealing with in Arizona, but you are seeing this massive cultural shift where this idea of a four-year university, especially with all the controversies attached to universities, is falling by the wayside.
As you know, before I got into radio, before I was even a speaker, I was a high school teacher for 10 years. And I got in trouble back then because I told my students that you don't have to go to the four-year university. There are plenty of trade schools out there. I mean, you can become a plumber. You can become a welder. You can make a decent, hard living. I mean, not more than decent. I mean, right now, some of these trades, you can come out into the $50,000 to $70,000 range downrange in Arizona, which is a beautiful state to live because of the cost of living. There are a lot of options out here. Don't fall into the brainwashing that you have to go to a four-year college. And right now, a four-year degree isn't worth what you're shelling out for it. We have so many degreed people down here who can't find a job, who can't find a job to even pay back their student loans for all of these degrees that are now starting to be kind of worthless.
Let's shift gears here a bit, and again, we touched upon this earlier in the show. But you run through the list of sort of what's dominating the news headlines right now. You have this today, the big Mueller could potentially subpoena Trump, but that was going back to March. Yesterday, we talked about Stormy Daniels filing this defamation lawsuit. You suddenly have the doctor from 2015 who apparently looked at President Donald Trump back then when he was a candidate and says that he was pushed to go and give him a good bill of health. Earlier in the week, you had the leaked Mueller questions. This all comes the week after what was considerably for Trump a decent week. You look at North Korea, you look at the disaster of the White House correspondence dinner, you look at liberal icon Joy Reid and the controversy around her. He's primed for a win on an immigration ban from the Supreme Court, and none other than Kanye West. Came out last week.
For the last week and a half, we've been neck deep in the whole Red for Ed movement. The teacher strike, that's all we covered. So I'm coming at this thing with a whole new, a fresh perspective. And let me tell you something, John, Justice, and Drew. The big story that it is being covered, but I don't think people understand how huge this Kanye West thing is. It is huge. And what conservatives need to do is step back and let it happen. We don't have to say we don't support or we don't have to give our opinion on Kanye. It doesn't matter. You know, as a conservative, American African descendant who is a conservative, I could talk to you about death threats. I could talk to you about speaking truth to power. I could talk to you about, you know, free speech. But I only have a pretty good size of social internet following. But Kanye has millions, tens of millions of people who don't give a hot damn about politics. And he is tweeting out Thomas Sowell. He is tweeting out some of the most hardcore conservative thoughts out there, and they're resonating. We need to thank Jesus and sit back and just watch the dominoes fall. When you have Maxine Waters, when you have the rap community, when you have the Hollywood elite attacking one individual over their free thought, and he's just throwing it right back at them, when you see the death threats that are coming at this cat because he simply says, I like Trump, I have to tell you that there are people out there who are paying attention who we never could have reached through conventional means.
Yep.
This is huge. And after I cut my video on Saturday, my daughter, my 17-year-old daughter, happened to catch it. And she said, Dad, you're absolutely right. All of my friends are now following Kanye. I can't even say his name. Kanye. They're following this guy, and they're, like, asking questions.
Yep.
You know, her father is a conservative talk show host. But they're asking questions, and they're asking real questions. And I am telling you that out of all the things you just mentioned, John Justice, this Kanye West thing is huge and is dangerous to the left.
I don't want
to shut him down.
You might be overstating how huge it is, and I don't want to overstate how huge it is. I'm not disagreeing with you, but I do think it's being underplayed by a lot of people. I do think it's being dismissed by a lot of people who should be paying a lot more closer attention to not just Kanye West, but there's a lot of people out there that have been saying this for a while. There's a lot of people out there don't have the megaphone that Kanye West, don't have the platform or the audience that Kanye West has, but have been echoing these types of sentiments, mainly not about Trump, not so much about Trump, not about Republicans. I mean, I don't think this is going to cause a mass exodus of African Americans shifting from Democrat to Republican, but shifting away from, you know, rejecting the sort of stranglehold and taken for grantedness that the Democrat Party has had over large swaths of the African American community for generations.
You're right.
Now
you're
they've
right.
taken
That's
that for granted, and if that ever goes away, they are done as a party.
That's what I'm saying, Drew. That's all that I meant by that. You're right. I'm not trying to say that this is the end all be all. I'm not trying to say that there's going to be, you know, a mass exodus from the Democrat Party to the Republican Party. Well, what I'm telling you is that people, if the left loses that stranglehold on that demographic, mm-hmm. and not just black kids, because Kanye West has a huge, like, American following,
yep.
That's going to create problems for them, and that's why you see them kind of freaking out, and that's what puts a smile on my face.
Look, we highlighted when it first broke last week this article from the Daily Beast, and it was from a person who was a massive Kanye West fan, and it was basically like two pages of them just trying to wrap their head around what they were hearing from an individual to which they immensely admired. And even at the end of it, they're like, well, I'm not ready to throw Kanye aside just yet. The reality is what you were saying, is that no, they're actually paying attention to what he's saying now, and they're actually listening to the points that he's making, where before they just get cast aside. And it's an understatement to say that it's impactful. It's incredibly impactful.
It's incredibly impactful. You know, yesterday I went to a baseball game here at Chase Field, see the Diamondbacks play the Dodgers. And I noticed that out of the 20,000 people there, that I was the only one wearing a cowboy hat. And
cultural appropriation.
Exactly. And the looks that I was getting, the people were like, "Stared." I'm used to that. But as an American African-American wearing a cowboy hat, people want to say cultural appropriation. But, you know, we were one of the original cowboys. Here's the thing. The thing is because I was listening to your conversation earlier, Drew, and I agree with you 100%. Why can't we just celebrate America in the same way we kind of do food, fusion? Why can't we all just be who we is, as I like to say?
Yep.
And I think that this whole controversy that's breaking out, I think we've been so polarized, but it's going to start coming back together, especially when you have bold people who do what Kanye's doing, who do Roseanne, you know, I don't think she's a Trump supporter, but she's saying some very bold things as well. You have a demographic of people who said enough.
Yeah,
and they want to do what they do.
They're sick of either being demonized themselves or watching their friends and neighbors and family members be demonized simply because other people disagree with them. James T. Harris, we are out of time. Great job as always, man. Good to chat with you. Look forward to catching up with you soon.
Thanks, buddy.
Search for James T. Harris online, any social media outlet. Find a show on the iHeartRadio app. He's fantastic.
Tomorrow, at this time, Fox News contributor Katie Pavlich. Lots to discuss with her, including the situation with Israel and Iran that we haven't had a chance to get to at all today.
We'll also catch up with Kim Crockett from Center of the American Experiment. We'll get her thoughts on what's going on with the emergency school funding, pre-K funding, things like that. Have a wonderful day, everybody. Go out and appropriate some culture.
Yeah.
Wow! Would you look at me?
I'm Chris Addison. Here's